Last week, Randy said he didn't quite get it. Ellen said it was the best show you ever did. Kara said you're really becoming a podcasting star. And Simon said you sound like a cheap imitation of Casey Kasem. Digital Flotsam starts right now. Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I am your host, P.W. Fenton. This episode is a collection of loosely related stories from my childhood, told both as I perceive them as a child and how I understand them as an adult. Speaking of adult, this episode deals with some adult themes. I personally think it's child safe, but parents of young'uns are advised to listen privately first and decide for themselves. I'm calling this episode Memoirs of a Future Adult. So, what was all the fuss about? Why would anyone even be interested in one of those? I mean, it's just a little pink thing wrapped in a blanket. Why is everyone oohing and eyeing and acting all stupid whenever they see it? I guess, being just 5 years old, I really didn't firmly grasp that the balled-up blanket that my mother was now carrying around contained my new sister. For that matter, I don't think I even knew what a sister was. People kept asking me if I liked having a new baby sister, but I don't think I even understood the question. My life was changing, though. Not only were my parents now obsessed with this blanket-wrapped thing that they brought home, but I had recently realized that all that stuff in my books that wasn't the pictures was the words to the stories everybody else seemed to know. It turns out they didn't know the stories. The stories were in those little marks under the pictures. I was very quickly learning to read. Little did I know, but this little pink football in a blanket was about to change my life even more. One thing that happened was that soon after my mother brought this thing home, we moved. We moved from the tiny upstairs apartment where I discovered the paralyzing effect of electricity to a little plain gray house, but one with a downstairs and an upstairs. And a front door and a back door, with a little porch in the front and a sort of pantry that stuck out in the back. That little pantry would eventually become the place where my own personal toy box was housed, a large wooden box with a hinged lid into which I placed all of my treasured possessions. This house was in a different place, too, a town called Travis. We didn't have to take the car to go to church on Sunday. We could just walk. I went to Sunday school there. I loved pasting the little cutout of Jesus into my notebook and then pasting a picture of a lamb over his outstretched arms. I thought that was quite clever, making Jesus look like he was carrying a little lamb. The Sunday school teacher just said I didn't listen to the instructions. And the paste that they had there was also delicious. I really liked our new neighborhood and our new house. I think my parents did too. We were always out, walking around the neighborhood with my little sister buried under blankets in a carriage. Everyone we passed would stop and peek into the carriage and spend a while talking to my mom and dad about my little sister, who mostly slept through all of this. I remember quite vividly one day when we all had taken a walk to the grocery store. We had just come out of the store when my mother saw the minister of our church walking down the street towards the store.
"Hide the beer, hide the beer,"
my mother whispered to my father. Quickly, my father slipped the 2 1-quart bottles of beer underneath the blanket that was covering my little sister. Puzzled, I looked up and said, "Why do we need to hide the beer?" My mother glared at me and said through clenched teeth, "Don't you say a word about the beer to the minister. Do you hear me? If he finds out about it, you will be in big trouble, mister." Just then the minister reached us and went straight for the carriage. He leaned down into the carriage and started cooing like everybody else normally did. "Oh, look at those puffy little cheeks. How are you, Betty Ann? How are you? Have you got a smile for me? You're getting so big." And all the while he's tugging on the blanket, pulling it lower to get a better look, I was terrified. Those bottles were almost as big as she was, and if he pulled the blanket down another inch, he was going to see them. And then something, I didn't know exactly what, something terrible was going to happen. Suddenly, he pulled his head out of the carriage and looked straight at me. "How about you, little man? What do you think about your little sister?" I stood frozen with fear, eyes open wide. I kept thinking, "Please don't ask me what's under the blanket. Please don't make me tell you." Just as I felt I was about to scream, "There's nothing under the blanket! There's nothing under the blanket!" he turned back to the carriage and pulled the blanket up around my sister's cheeks and said to my mother, "Well, you better get her home quickly. It's getting awfully cold out here." I walked home relieved that we had somehow avoided some unspeakable horror. Years later, I would learn that the church we belonged to was a Methodist church that was extremely anti-alcohol. So much so that the communion wine came straight from a can of Welch's grape juice. Grown-ups were very hard for me to understand. I never knew what made them do the things they did or say the things they said, but I was very eager to learn. I wanted to be a grown-up very badly. Clearly, grown-ups got whatever they liked. Nobody bossed them around. Nobody made them go to bed. And going to bed was one of the things that really bugged me. I did not like the fact that I had to go to bed. They still did things. They listened to cool radio shows. They talked about stuff. They did things that I could hear. They would put me to bed, and I would wait a few minutes and then tiptoe out of my bedroom and sit at the top of the stairs and listen to my parents below. I loved the radio shows they listened to after I went to bed. Shows like The Inner Sanctum, The Shadow, cool, scary shows. And when they had company, like my aunts and uncles over, they would make me go to bed earlier, it seemed. I remember one night when several people had come over and I had been sent to bed. I could hear them talking loudly and then all laughing, and I realized they were telling jokes. I love jokes. I heard jokes on the radio. They were fun. And I was being left out again. I very quietly slid on my butt down the steps, one step at a time, until I could hear them quite clearly, but they still couldn't see me from the living room. One of my uncles was telling a joke. "So there's this guy and this girl, and it's their wedding night, and they're in this hotel, and this girl is in the bathroom just crying her eyes out. And the guy asks her what the problem is, and she cries even more. So this poor guy, he doesn't know what to do, so he calls his father on the phone. He says, 'Dad, I don't know what to do.' We got ready for bed. We get in bed. I turns out the light. I say goodnight, and she starts crying. I ask her what's wrong, and she locks herself in the bathroom. So the father says, 'I guess I never told you about the birds and the bees.' And the guy says, 'What's that?' So the father is still a little uncomfortable with the subject, but he tells the guy what to do. He says, 'Take off all your clothes, and when she comes out of the bathroom, take off all of her clothes. Get in the bed with her, and then take the hardest thing you got and stick it right into where she pees. That's what she's expecting you to do.'" So an hour later, the kid calls his father back and says, "Dad, you gotta help me. It didn't work. Now it's worse. I don't know what to do." The father says, "Did you do what I told you?" Kid says, "Yeah." Father says, "Well, tell me what happened." The guy says, "Well, I took off all my clothes, just like you said, and then I took off all of her clothes, and then we got into the bed." The father says, "Yeah, yeah. And did you do what I said? Did you take your hardest thing and put it into where she pees?" The guy says, "Well, yeah. I got up and I put my bowling ball in the toilet, but she's still crying her eyes out." Before my uncle could even finish the words, "still crying her eyes out," everybody's screaming and laughing, like it was the funniest thing they ever heard. They were so loud, I ran back to my bed, afraid they were coming my way. But I laid there for hours thinking about that story. Not only was it not funny, it didn't even make any sense. Why would the guy's father want him to put a bowling ball in the toilet? I was baffled. I thought about it for years. So here I was, now going on 7 years old. I had these salty parents, yet I was, like most kids that age, completely innocent. Or at least I seemed to be. But sometimes I picked up things. One day in the springtime, right around my birthday, I was outside sitting on our little front porch with my mother. We had been sitting out there waiting for my dad to come home from work. Seconds after my dad pulled into the driveway, the minister from our church, out on one of his regular strolls, walked up the path from the street and greeted us there on the front porch. Now, I need to tell you something important to this story. My parents gave me a nickname. They wanted to prevent people from branding me with the prefix Little. My Uncle Buddy's son was known as Little Buddy. My Uncle Roy's first son was known as Little Roy. My Uncle Walter's son was known as Little Walter, and so on. My parents started calling me Rusty, a name they adopted because of my reddish-brown hair. To this day, family members from New York still all call me Rusty. Well, when he walked up, our minister did that thing that all grown-ups do that I really hated. He lovingly put his hand on top of my head and mussed up my hair as he said hello. I guess doing that made him think of my nickname, and he said, "What do they call you around here?" I was puzzled by the question. My mother prompted me, he wants to know your name. The minister said, "Yeah." I said, shyly, "Paul?" He said, No. What do they call you?" This time I said it with more conviction. "Paul." The minister kind of chuckled. "No, I know your name is Paul, but your mother calls you something else. What does she call you?" I was baffled. I had no idea what this man was after. It wasn't dawning on me at all. Ever helpful, he said, "When your mother calls you sometime, she doesn't say Paul, she says something else. What does she call you when she doesn't use Paul? What does your mother call you sometimes?" My little mind raced as I searched for whatever this guy was looking for. "What does your mother call you sometimes? What does your mother call you sometimes?" Suddenly, a look of relief came over my brow. I had come up with it. At least I thought so. I looked up at the minister with a big smile and said, "Little bastard?" Later that same year, having a little sister began to be more of a reality to me, and I did not like it. The first 5 years of my life were great. They were all about me. Sure, there was that annoying part about not being a grown-up, but for the most part, things were great. But then she came, and now it was harder to get the spotlight. I could easily have coped with that, I think, but then it began to get worse. She started walking and talking and doing things. And now she was no longer just annoying, it was downright unfair. It seemed like every other day I was getting into trouble for something, and yet she could do anything. She was fully functional and yet everyone still referred to her as the baby. Oh, look at what the baby is doing. Isn't that cute? Don't do that. Let the baby have that. She's just a baby. She didn't mean to break your Roy Rogers plate. She doesn't know any better. She's just a baby. This baby stuff was really getting old. She could break my toys, and there was nothing I could do. She could punch me in the eye, and there was nothing I could do. She could scribble on my beautiful drawing, and there was nothing I could do. She could snatch a cookie right out of my hand and run away, and there was nothing I could do. She could throw my favorite record in the garbage, and there was nothing I could do. She could strangle a pet duck to death, and there was nothing I could do. You get the picture? Baby diplomatic immunity. But the clincher happened one day when I was minding my own business. The baby was playing with dolls or something far away from me. I was performing for my grandmother. My grandmother was sitting in a chair in the living room, and I was down on one knee singing like Al Jolson. I don't remember if it was Swanee or Mammy, doesn't matter. What matters is that my grandmother never even warned me that the baby was behind me. Her eyes never even widened as the baby raised the wooden baseball bat that she could hardly lift high over my head. My grandmother never shouted, "No," or "Look out," or anything. And then there was this awful sound and pain, and then everything went dark. When I came around, they all assured me that the baby didn't understand what she was doing. The baby didn't mean it. Try to tell that to an 8-year-old with an enormous lump on the top of his head. Okay, now an important postscript. We jump forward a few years, and now I'm a worldly 11-year-old, about to turn 12. We lived in the projects now, and I'm in the living room watching some Saturday daytime TV when my mother announces that she and my sister are going out to the playground. This was not something that happened much. In fact, the reason I remember it so clearly is that it pretty much never happened. As soon as they were out the door, the reason for this unusual state of affairs became apparent. My father asked me what I knew about the birds and the bees. I knew virtually nothing. He asked me a few questions about things my friends might have told me, but quickly he satisfied himself that he was starting with a clean slate. He then explained, in sort of general terms, how conception worked, how pregnancy worked, and then how the whole birth thing went down. When it was time for me to ask questions, I, of course, was interested most about how that first part worked, the part I, the guy, would participate in. Dad did a great job. He didn't pull any punches. And soon, I had a firm, no pun intended, idea of the mechanics of that first part and how it worked. It's a lot of information to wrap your head around in just an hour. When I had exhausted all of my questions, I asked my father if I could go to my room and play records. He said, sure. As I walked down the hallway to my room, with all this new knowledge spinning around in my head, I had a flashback. For an instant, I was in our old house again, and I was sitting in my pajamas near the top of the stairs, eavesdropping on the adults downstairs. And I got the joke. The bowling ball, the toilet. I finally got the joke. March 15th will mark another anniversary of my father's unexpected passing. As I record this, it will be more than 3 years since I've hugged him, besides in my dreams. The other night I was channel surfing, looking for something good to doze off to, and I stopped on the local PBS station that was about to play a program called Chet Atkins, Certified Guitar Player. It was so great that I wound up staying up and watching the whole thing. Near the end of the concert, he walked out on stage wearing a handsome white fedora.
You know, every time I look in the mirror, I see my dad. I think that's why this song means so much to me. When I was young, my dad would say, "Come on, son, let's go out and play." Sometimes it seems like yesterday. Then I'd climb up the closet shelf when I was all by myself, grab his hat and fix the brim, pretending I was him. No matter how hard I try, no matter how many tears I cry, no matter how many years go by, I still can't say goodbye. He always took care of Mom and me. We all cut down a Christmas tree. He always had some time for me. Wind blows through the trees, street lights, they still shine bright. Most things are the same, but I miss my dad tonight. I walk by a Salvation Army store, saw a hat like my daddy wore, tried it on when I walked in, still trying to be like him. No matter how hard I try, no matter how many years go by, no matter how many tears I cry, I still can't say goodbye.
So there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. As usual, I've included some really cool music to support my blabbing, and I'd like you all to visit digitalflotsam.com and check out the show notes, where you can find links to all of that great music. Click on the links if you like the music and buy it for yourself. That's how artists earn a living. And while you are fooling around on the internet, check out my new weekly show, Whole Nother Story. Each show is bite-sized, only about 5 minutes long, and I think you'll enjoy it. You'll find it at wholenotherstory.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. Now pick up the hymnals on the back of the seats and read along with Young Al as he gives the final benediction.
And Peter holded the microphone.